This is the ARC Energy Ideas Podcast with Peter Terzakian and Jackie Forrest, exploring trends that influence the energy business.
Well, welcome back. I'm Peter Terzakian, and welcome to the ARC Energy Ideas Podcast. I'm here with
Jackie Forrest. And today we're going to have a special guest, Norman J.D. Sawyer, President and CEO of ARC Nuclear Canada. So ARC Energy Institute and ARC Nuclear Canada are not related.
No.
But before we get Norman on, we wanted to talk a little bit about nuclear energy. And Peter, I know with the Energy File launch and your website, you've got a card about
Yeah, we do. Nuclear. We have a vignette card on the energyfile.org. That's energyphile.org. And if you go there and you search under atomic, you'll see an atomic energy vignette and talks about the dawn of a new era. It's a actually interesting pamphlet back from the early 1960s from Consolidated Edison, one of the big Northeastern utilities at the time. It talks about the dawn of a new era of atomic energy, and it was a brochure to convince the public that this new energy source had tons of promise and was really miraculous in a sense, because 3 million pounds of coal could be replaced by just 1 pound of uranium, according to the,
yeah.
So it's really quite amazing in the energy density. And you know what? If you look at the history of nuclear power, it really was in the 1960s and 70s, and particularly then into the 1980s, post the oil price shocks, because the oil price shocks of the 70s was really a catalyst for many countries to adopt a policy of phasing out oil in favor of using this new energy system based on a completely new fuel source, which was fissionable materials like uranium and plutonium. And the dawn of nuclear power really took off.
Well, and it's interesting, that particular plant that it was talking about was Indian Point Nuclear Plant near New York.
Mm-hmm.
And it is still operating today, but is planned to be decommissioned fairly soon. So it lasts a long time.
These things last many, many decades. I guess in that case, almost 50, 60 years.
Well, let's fast forward from 1960 to today and welcome our guest, Norman, to our podcast. Welcome, Norman.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad to be here today.
Yeah. Maybe, Norman, give us a quick thumbnail of what we have here in Canada. I think a lot of people have heard about the Bruce Nuclear Power Plants in Ontario, but little known. I think there's one in New Brunswick as well, right?
That's correct. There's a Point La Prole Generating Station. It's 700 megawatt. It's called a CANDU 6. Came online in the early 80s, was refurbished in 2012, and it's back up and operating, and operating very well.
So give us a sense of your background and how you got to know these power plants and how you spun out into your own company called ARC.
Well, I started my career at the Point La Prole Generating Station, which is owned by NB Power, and actually I was licensed to operate the reactor there and spent a decade running the reactor. And then moved on to the regulatory side of the business with the Canadian Nuclear Safety Commission, who's the regulator for nuclear in Canada. I spent 10 years there, went back to Point La Prole for a little bit, and then ended up leading the Hydro-Québec nuclear generating station. A lot of people don't realize, actually, there was two nuclear power plants in Gentilly-Deux, which is just outside of Trois-Rivières.
Mm-hmm.
And one that only ran for a very short time. It was more of a prototype. And then there was another one, a sister station to the Point La Prole station, built that ran for a long time. It ran for 30 years. But it has been since shut down. And then you have the big plants, the Darlington, which has 4 units. You have Pickering that has 8, but only 6 operating. And then you have the largest, and at the time, when I was there as chief nuclear officer, the largest nuclear site operating site in the world, which was Bruce Power, which has 8 reactors.
Yeah, I mean, these are huge, and they were brought about, I mean, as you say, in the 70s, 80s, and have been running now since then. I guess it's like 40 years-ish. There's a dawn of a new age, potentially, of nuclear here, which was what we're really excited to talk to you about, because in an era of decarbonization and reducing emissions or zero emissions, nuclear is sort of becoming more popular in the thinking of tackling climate change.
Yes, a lot of people don't realize, if you look at the Ontario experience in particular, when we brought back the Bruce A units, so when Bruce Power leased the site from Ontario Power Generation for the units, which was Bruce A, was shut down. So from 2003 to 2014, 4 of those units were brought up back to power. And interesting enough, there's a report out of the Clean Air Ontario Asthma Society of Canada, and Bruce Power produced a report that showed that in 2005, there was 53 smog days where they told people in Toronto not to go outside. When we brought all those units back online and we ended up shutting all the coal power plants down in Ontario, there was zero in 2014. It's quite amazing the difference you do from producing that much CO2 to where you have nuclear units that don't produce CO2.
Mm-hmm. Don't have air quality issues. Now, tell us about your technology, which is, you know, not too many people are talking about putting in those big, massive nuclear plants, and maybe that's still happening in some areas of the world like China, but the new thing that's being talked about is these smaller modular reactors. Now, I've heard them called a small nuclear or mini nuclear, but I think modular reactors is maybe the term that is most often used. How are they different than the big power plant like you were explaining at Bruce Power in Ontario?
Well, you're quite right. They're called small modular reactors, or SMRs, as the people in the industry call them. First of all, now I'll talk about my technology. Now, CANDU reactors, which is the Canadian version of the big reactors, they're extremely safe. But the SMRs, and our reactor is called the ARC-100, it's two orders of magnitude safer than the CANDU design. So the first thing, the big difference is they're much safer. The second one is around cost. To build those big reactors today is somewhere between $8 and $10 billion. And there's been reactors, they tried to build them in the U.S., they bankrupt companies, and there's a few being built still and that are costing much more than we're supposed to. So these are what you call stick file builds. So they're built in the field from a construction perspective. Well, if you modularize your processes, and you become very efficient, you can produce, mass produce these things because they're so much smaller. So an SMR would fit on the back of a truck, a boat, or a ship, and you can bring them anywhere in the world.
Before we get to the costs, Norm, like, let's get back to the safety issue because I know that's at the forefront of people's minds. So the concern with the traditional big, gigantic nuclear reactors, the meltdown, you start a chain reaction that's uncontrollable and then it escapes into the atmosphere, such as it did in Chernobyl or Fukushima by virtue of the tsunami. And so what is it about the small modular reactor that would prevent that?
So our technology, what it is called inherently safe. So what that means, basically, it naturally controls its power output without human intervention. Now, some people call it walk away. I don't necessarily like that word because you don't want to walk away from anything that's operating. But what that means is that our reactor, as it heats up, actually power goes down, which is not necessarily what the big reactors do. So the big reactors, you have these complex engineered systems to make sure these things are always safe. Well, with our particular technology, you don't need that. So the safety margin is so great. And the fact that you can't produce enough power in the reactor to boil anything, you have no energy release. And thirdly, the most importantly, is the big reactors are pressurized. Our little reactor is not pressurized. It runs at essentially at atmospheric pressure. And so therefore, you don't have any energy there to release.
So the probability of it achieving like a meltdown or an uncontrollable chain reaction leading to some explosion is unlikely with this kind of technology.
That's correct. And ours was proven. It was based on the EBR-II technology in the U.S. that ran for over 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually did those tests. So if you go and watch the movie Pandora's Promise, our little reactor, our prototype reactor, is actually the one they give an example. They actually tried the Three Mile Island test and the Fukushima and the other one, the Chernobyl.
Mm-hmm.
And you just can't produce enough energy to create an event of that sort. So that makes it so much safer.
Okay, and have these things been deployed anywhere, like in commercial
our
uses?
Reactor, there was EBR-1 that ran a few light bulbs. EBR-2 ran with 20 megawatts for 30, 35 years. We're the only technology that actually can say that we have a prototype that ran for over three decades by world-leading experts.
Mm-hmm. And that was done by the Department of Energy in the U.S., is that right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
So it's 20 megawatts, and just put this in perspective. I mean, the typical big nuclear power plants is like 1,000 megawatts plus, right?
That's correct. Yeah, our reactor is 100 megawatts is what it is. so we just made it a little bit bigger. And the idea there is we're into a specific market. We're not there to compete with the 1,000-megawatt reactors. So our approach is, for example, New Brunswick has a smaller grid. Nova Scotia has a smaller grid. Saskatchewan has a smaller grid. These smaller reactors fit so much better. The cost is very much lower. It's only $500 million to build one of these things. And you can add them as you need them. But if the economy turns around and you don't need to, you know, your power growth is not there anymore, well, you don't build as many as you thought. Mm-hmm. So it's very much more flexible that way.
And just for comparison, the Shepherd outside of Calgary, that natural gas cogen is about 800 megawatts. Mm-hmm. But some of the cogens in the oil sands are in the range of 85 to 100 megawatts. Mm-hmm. So there are definitely some applications on the industrial side here in Western Canada where that type of magnitude would make a lot of sense.
Is that the market then, Norm? I mean, I've even heard that you put these things on the back of a railway car and then roll them into a community or an industrial site, and then you basically plug into the thing. I mean, that's simplified, of course.
Yeah, well, there's different types. Our model is not quite like that. Our model is you're going to have a site that's built, and then you construct this thing away from the site. It'll be done in manufacturing shop, and then just put on in the back of a tug or a ship or a boat or a train, and you ship it to wherever it goes, and then you truck it and you install it in, and it sits there with a 100-megawatt unit, which is similar to a gas unit, essentially. In fact, one of our equity owners is GE Hitachi, and they have units that they use for the gas turbines. It's just one of those right off the shelf.
Now, one other issue, I think, when people think about nuclear that's concerning is the waste, right? That you get this waste that will be radioactive for the foreseeable forever, for infinity. Is your process any different when it comes to waste management, and what are you going to do to store the waste?
Yeah, so that's an important point. And I think anything going forward here needs to deal with the back end, I call it, of the fuel cycle. You need to close that fuel cycle. So one of the main differences of the SMRs, you have Gen 3 Plus, which is basically the big reactors made smaller and they still use water technology. Or you go into Gen 4, it's called, which is where we are, which is the advanced reactors. In our case, our fueling cycle is 20 years. So you compare that to a CANDU reactor that fuels 5 or 6 times a week. We fuel once every 20 years. And for the equivalent power, a CANDU reactor would produce somewhere in the vicinity of 20,000 used fuel bundles. We would produce 182.
So you're saying like in a traditional big reactor, you have these fuel rods that you have to replace every 6 weeks, and then you have to take the rod out and put it somewhere in this sort of temporary storage and then ultimately bury it deep underground somewhere for the next 250,000 years. In your case, you only have to fuel it once every 20 years, presumably because it doesn't get as hot as a traditional nuclear reactor. But what happens after 20 years?
Okay. So after 20 years, what we call it, reconstitute the fuel. So in other words, we take those fuel bundles or those fuel assemblies out. We recharge them with a small amount of new uranium, and mm-hmm. we put them back in and run them another 20 years. And so we have to take out some of the waste. So any technology produces waste, but our waste is so much smaller, and it's not a 250,000-year a problem. The waste that we take out is very, very short-lived. So it's somewhere in the 100-year range. So much, it's like so much easier to handle.
Okay, so I mean, the benefits are that originally you said on the safety side, two orders of magnitude side, 100 times safer, and the waste issue is substantially diminished. So tell us how you can change public perception about these things.
Well, I think, to be quite frank, I think public perception is changing. So the way when I speak to people is for a number of years, the Canadian industry, now I'm talking about the Canadian industry, has been putting a small amount of money aside to make sure we can deal with the CANDU waste when these reactors are shut down. Other technologies, fossil, have really not done anything. And so they continue to release to the environment their waste. So while the nuclear industry has been taking care of their waste, we're coming to find out today that the other process, which was the fossil fuel process, is really generating some major concerns with climate change.
I kind of get that, Norm. But I mean, the issue is if you said to a community or anywhere near people, frankly, okay, we're going to build a nuke, mini or otherwise, the immediate reaction is, oh my God, this thing isn't safe and it's got waste issues and so on and so forth. Like, how do you overcome that barrier, the upfront barrier?
Well, I believe it's that's where I was going to, is it's overcoming now. I think most experts in the world are now saying for us to continue with the growth that we want, we need to support it with nuclear. Nuclear is the only available base load that doesn't produce CO2 emissions. And I'm talking about SMRs now. And SMRs are going to play a big role in that because, as I mentioned, the facts are, as I mentioned, they're two orders of magnitude safer, and they take care of the waste. So any type of generation of electricity is going to produce waste. Mm-hmm. The nuclear industry takes care of their waste, and it's safe.
Well, and the other thing that you talked about is they're modular, so hopefully the construction costs don't become two times what you thought they were going to be. Do you think that the costs can be more controlled? Is there a lot of construction needed on site?
Yeah, let's talk about the C word, cost. What does it cost to commission one of these things?
So our reactor is $500 million as compared to a CANDU that's probably $10 billion. Now, CANDU is 700 megawatts. Our reactor is 100 megawatts. That's $500 million. Mm-hmm. The way you control costs is control the environment. And we have some fabulous labor forces across Canada. If you have them in a control environment with, not working out in the field and all the pieces are being put together in a control shop and a control environment, your cost goes down.
Mm-hmm. So
it's been proven. It's almost like manufacturing cars at that point.
Okay, so the $500 million upfront, but let's translate that into like what electricity price do you need to justify being able to build one of these things and get a return for the investors?
So basically, our cost on the grid would be 7 cents a kilowatt, which is very comparable to a lot of things. I was told that, for example, in Saskatchewan, at 7 cents a kilowatt, you're cheaper than Manitoba Hydro because of the lines. In New Brunswick, there was a refurbishment of a CANDU reactor at Point La Pro. It was 8.2 cents. We're well below that. Mm-hmm. If you look at hydro in Newfoundland, it's 23 cents a kilowatt because of the delays. So you can see the cost is extremely good in this case.
So your target market really, though, is not really going head-to-head with the hydro guys, which are already established and so on, or the places where there aren't nearly as much coal, right? I mean, so the two provinces in Canada that still have significant quantities of coal within their grid are Alberta and Saskatchewan.
So, although that's changing in Alberta, we're transitioning a lot to natural gas.
So we're down from, I don't know what it was, like 75%. Of our grid was coal, certainly when I was looking at it in detail 10, 20 years ago, I think we're out on 50%. But whatever it is, I mean, this is the opportunity here. So, and let's talk maybe even the oil sands and so on.
Yeah, I was actually going to say too, Norm, you know, when you say 7 cents a kilowatt hour, that's higher than natural gas or wind or solar. But at the same time, there are opportunities here because there are places where we don't have transmission lines. So I'm thinking LNG on the West Coast. You got to build this big LNG terminal. It's in a very remote location. So I would think your technology would fit something like that really well when you can avoid a transmission line by putting in the modular reactor.
It does. So let me just clarify a couple of points. So we are cheaper than solar and wind, if you really look at it. So that's one thing.
Over the life cycle of the whole plant.
That's correct. Yeah. There's no way. And so for example, in New Brunswick, they had 300 megawatts of wind. At any one point, there's only 100 megawatts spinning because it's only a 30% efficiency on those things. So the cost of wind is well beyond what we would put out. And as far as coal, so yes, Alberta, Saskatchewan, but there's also New Brunswick and Nova Scotia. And the plan in New Brunswick is obviously to build a number of our reactors here, and we already have an affirmation from the government that we're going to move forward with this to replace their coal plant here. But there's also an opportunity for New Brunswick to sell power into Nova Scotia, where they have 1,200 megawatts of coal. So there's coal across the country, essentially. And you're quite right. Then you have the oil sands. And we just did a tabletop exercise, for example, to compare how much energy we would need to produce to replace what's going on in the oil sands today. And that's both for electric and the heat consumption up there, to boil the water, get the oil out of the ground. And it's over 124 units up just alone up in the oil sands.
And the advantage of the nuclear is you can provide heat and power too, right, to where some of those other sources would only provide electricity.
Can you talk a little bit about I'm curious about the fuel, because I know, I mean, another factoid that's little known is that Saskatchewan has, I think it's the world's largest deposits of uranium. And so we've got the fuel here in Canada, at least the raw fuel, but the fuel has to be processed and turned into reactor grade fuel. Where is that done? Where is that upgrading of the uranium done?
Well, there's different facilities. There's facilities in Canada and the U.S. And obviously, when you bring a new reactor online, that means there will be a new facility that's most likely required. And so you have places in Ontario, for example, they have fuel manufacturing facilities. Cameco is a great company out of Saskatchewan, as you mentioned, that produces a lot of uranium around the world. So there may be some investment opportunities for them to build a facility, but most likely, and that would be for any new SMR coming on the market, most of them would need a new facility to make, because the fuel is somewhat different. You know, one of the criteria for our fuel, as I mentioned, was 2 magnitudes higher of safety. One of the big advantages is the fuel. So that's where you make your safety case better, is when you make better fuel.
Okay, so we got the fuel. We've got lots of opportunities in Canada. I want to talk a little bit about New Brunswick's role in fostering this technology. Did they play a role in terms of, I know they're supporting your first commercial project, but did they play any other role in terms of fostering you to be in the position that you're in today?
Yeah, it's amazing. For a little province, they really had a visionary outlook, when they thought about doing this new innovation cluster funding, and they put an RFP out for a number of companies to bid in. They looked at it from perspective. They knew that climate was an issue for most of the residents in New Brunswick. They knew they had coal they had to deal with. They also have an oil plant they have to deal with. And they have a nuclear that's been running so well for so long, but recognized that the price tag for the old nuclear was just out of their reach. So they said, is there something else we can do? Is there advanced nuclear that we can develop here in New Brunswick as an economic opportunity? Through that process, the companies bid in. We were one of the ones that they picked, and we've been working with them ever since. But really, they looked at it two ways. As I mentioned, they knew that their assets, their coal plant is 2030 by the regulations in Canada. The life expectancy of the nuclear unit is 2038. So they really had to do something, and they really moved on. It was amazing. And to be quite frank, they're the only province in Canada to date to put any money on the table for SMRs. And that includes the federal government.
Mm-hmm. Well, and recently, though, there has been an announcement from New Brunswick, Saskatchewan, Ontario. They signed a memorandum of understanding to work more collaboratively on SMR technology. So does that mean that those other provinces might get more involved?
Yeah, so they, I think through that leadership that New Brunswick demonstrated, Ontario and Saskatchewan seen an opportunity for them. As you were talking earlier, Saskatchewan understands that they have to deal with their coal units, but they have also, in my discussions with them, are also thinking about gas. So Saskatchewan is realizing that if you look out 20 years from now, gas will be the new coal, and they'll have to deal with that. So they want to skip the phase of going back to gas again and go directly into nuclear. So, you know, and plus, obviously, they have the uranium supplies they're dealing with. So they wanted to join New Brunswick as well, and Ontario being a big player in nuclear forever. They just seen that leadership, and the premiers talked together and said, hey, let's work together. And I would not be surprised in the very near future if Alberta would not sign on to that also.
Okay, but before Alberta and others can sign on, there has to be a regulatory process, I assume. So can you talk a little about that? Does this fall under the Canadian Energy Regulator?
So it's the Canadian Nuclear Safety Commission.
Okay.
And they're the ones that decide whether any reactor that's going to be built in Canada is safe or not. And so therefore, we're going through a process. We were the second ones in Canada for on-grid technology, they call it, to get the phase one of a vendor design review, which is really a review of our design to make sure that we follow the laws of the land. And so we were very successful in that, and we're just finished our planning phase and getting ready to sign on for phase two, which they go a deeper dive and do a lot more research on us. So that process is not a licensing process. The licensing process begins when, for example, New Brunswick Power decides, okay, we're going to build one, and they have to go apply for a license. So in Canada, you license an operator, not a design.
Okay, so let's just say I'm a customer, be it an oil sands commercial customer or otherwise. Say, okay, Norm, I want one. I've got the money right here, right now. How long is it going to take from the point of the final investment decision to the time that it's licensed and built?
So right now, we have a real example with New Brunswick. So we expect to be online, licensed and everything, running in 2028. So that's roughly seven years from now.
Well, and I would imagine that once you've got the regulatory approval, the next one would be faster. Is that right?
That's an excellent point. After that, you're looking at 3 or 4 years because the licensing part, it's only after that, it's only the site that it's different. The reactor itself never changes. So that's why you can mass manufacture these things.
And would a province like Alberta, you know, we don't have regulation since we don't have a nuclear industry today. Would there be a potentially more delay in a province that would have to develop a lot of those rules?
No, it's a federal. Nuclear is federal. Yeah. So it's all done out of Ottawa with the Canadian Nuclear Safety Commission. And you know, we have one of the strongest regulators in the world. We're very lucky, and some great scientists work there. And as somebody once said, the environmentalist said, if the CNSC says it's safe, it must be safe. They do excellent work.
So it strikes me, Norm, that, you know, getting back to the market opportunity, we've got a vast north where in many communities they fly diesel in. You know, we've got communities like Yellowknife, where renewables don't work all that well because it's dark for 3 months of the year, so solar is sort of out of the question. When it's really cold, typically the wind doesn't blow. And so this is much more of a baseload power that seems to me that would have quite a bit of potential up north.
Oh, you're quite right. We also have an approach where you can, as I mentioned, so it's 100 megawatts with 20-year fuel cycle. Hmm. Well, if you run 50 megawatts, you can go 40 years. Hmm. So you imagine you can put one of these things somewhere up north in the Yukon or Northwest Territories or wherever it may be, and it just can run for that long. Normally, you'll have to have people around to run it, but it provides power, and you're off of diesel.
Okay, well, that seems like there's some really neat applications in Canada. It's great to see a Canadian company and in New Brunswick fostering this innovative technology. I'm sure we'll have application even beyond the borders of Canada as well. You know, the IEA sustainable scenario, that's the scenario where it's less than 2 degrees, expects that nuclear generation will grow by 60% to 2040. And we hope that Canada is a leader in that. It's great to hear your story.
Well, you know, Canada has been a leader. I mean, the CANDU reactors were one of the leading designs back in, when it was at Norm, the 60s, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, and so here we are again with some leading small modular reactor technology that sounds like it's got a lot of potential going forward. So, Norm, how can our listeners learn more about is there a website that they can go to?
Yes, so our website is with our parent company right now is www.arcnuclear.com. And there's even a way you can send us messages and ask questions. We have people that are assigned to answer those questions. And I think this is the future. As you mentioned earlier, the world is saying nuclear has to be part of this. And here's a way that Canada can help itself deal with its emissions and also help other countries as it goes forward.
Good. Well, thank you, Norm, for coming on our podcast, and thank you, listeners, for joining it. If you like this podcast, please tell someone else about us and rate us on the app that you listen to.
For more ideas and insights, visit arcenergyinstitute.com.